Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously,
all honor to Finn Jarendor!
Jess. We can't do this. We can't. Douglas is my friend. Anne. What are you doing here?
How could you?
The charge is treason. Louis Deathstalker, you have betrayed your king with the woman who is to be his queen. You are not fit to be Imperial Champion. You are hereby stripped of that office on the authority of the king and this house.
I'll be back for you, Jess. I swear it!
You've done well, Finn Durandal. You shall be my new champion. I should have made you champion first.
Finn sent me here. I think he wants to send a message to anyone else who might consider running out on him. But I've decided that I'm not going to do that. Because I like you, Brett. I'm going to run away with you.
That's nice, Rose.
Owen Deathstalker, Hazel Dark, Diana Virtue, Tobias Moon, and Captain John Silence. It is possible that some or all are still alive. You must search out the history, the truth. Go to Mistworld, to Lacrimae Christi, to Unsealing.
I should have been the champion.
Why settle for champion when you can be king?
What are you doing here, Saturday? What's the deal with this ship?
I want to see some real action!
Hi there! I'm Brett Random. Seems we're fated to work together too! I think you probably know my companion.
Everyone knows the Wild Rose of the Arena. Do I take it you both want to join up as well?
Greetings! I am your ship's AI, Ozymandias by name. So, where are we going first?
Unsealing.
Last night, I dreamed of Hazel Dark. Thief, clone legger, confidence trickster, warrior, heroine. Official legend made her fearless and noble, a saint and a martyr. But she was none of those things. Her dreams were small and petty. And she never gave a damn for causes or politics. But still, she was magnificent. She took on everything the Empire could throw against her, and never once backed down. She had her inner demons, and fought those just as fiercely. When it mattered, she did the right thing. Again and again and again. In my dream, I see her so clearly. Poor lost Hazel, with her sharp, pointed face, the go-to-hell defiance of her bright green eyes, her ratty mane of red hair, her pout and her scowl, and her brief, flashing smiles. She moved like a fighter, because life had never taught her how to be tender. She fought so hard to be able to call her life her own, and much good it did her. She won nothing she valued, and lost the only man she ever cared for.
Owen, you lied to me. You promised me we'd always be together. Forever and ever. Oh, Owen. I never told you I loved you.
She won every battle, and still lost the war. And in the end, there was nothing left but the darkness that had threatened to overwhelm her all her life. So she ran away into it. And was never seen again. Last night I dreamed of Hazel Dark. She'd finally come home. She was smiling. And even in my dream, I wondered why I wasn't glad to see her.
Thank you.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Return. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Nanette Savard, Chris Rowan, Dylan Lynch, and Mort Shelby. Episode 1, In the Footsteps of Legends. Louis Deathstalker and his rebel companions had been traveling together in their hijacked yacht, the Hereward, for almost 2 days now. They hadn't even reached the edge of the core planets yet, and already they were all mulling over detailed plans on how best to kill each other. Occasionally, they'd take time out to consider less important problems, such as where the hell they were going, or how best to overthrow Finn Durandal, find the Lost Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark, stop the Terror before it destroyed the whole of existence, and return the Empire to its golden age. But first things first. The trouble was, the Hereward was essentially a pleasure craft, designed to carry only its captain and a very few close friends in style and comfort, so the four outlaws and their 8-foot-tall reptiloid companion were finding things a bit cramped, not to mention distinctly claustrophobic. Louis sat slumped in the captain's chair on the bridge, swiveling slowly back and forth, just for something to do. The ship's AI, Ozymandias, was running all the things that mattered, and the Hereward's top-of-the-line security systems meant nothing less than a Star Cruiser could detect them, except by accident. Since of late, most conversations had tended to escalate very quickly into shouting matches, a strained silence currently occupied the bridge. So, Louis swiveled slowly back and forth, studying his reluctant partners in turn.
Ugh.
Jessamine Flowers sat beside him on the only other chair, scowling at the protein cube and cup of distilled water that made up the main meal of the day. She was tall, blonde, heart-stoppingly beautiful, and voluptuously glamorous, because her role as the Empire's premier star and diva demanded it. But after all this time away from her beauticians and stylists, the strain was beginning to show. She still looked marvelous. She just didn't look like a goddess anymore. Louis didn't care, but Jessamine did. It had been a long time since she'd had to settle for being merely marvelous. But still, she'd given up being a superstar, the worshipped and adored queen-to-be, in order to cleave to her true love, Louis. She'd given up everything for him, and he had vowed never to make her regret it. Although he loved her with all his heart, Louis still had to wonder what she saw in him. Louis wasn't a god. He wasn't even handsome. His face was broad and harsh-featured, full of character perhaps, but still almost defiantly ugly. He could have had it fixed, but he honestly never saw the point. He was what he was, inside and out. He was also short and blocky, well-muscled because his old jobs as Paragon and Champion had demanded it, and so broad-chested that from a distance he often seemed as wide as he was tall. He kept his black hair short so he wouldn't have to bother about it, and shaved regularly, only because Jessamine insisted on it. He had surprisingly mild blue eyes and a rare but good-natured smile. He was a Deathstalker, a warrior by choice, and an outlaw through grim necessity. He and Jessamine shared the captain's cabin. It had all the comforts that could be expected, and more besides, but Jessamine still found plenty to complain about. She tried to be humorous about it, but of late, the jokes had become less funny and more pointed. Louis let his chair carry him slowly around until his gaze fell upon Rose Constantine, a blood-red flower with more thorns than most, the wild rose of the arena. She was sitting cross-legged on the steel floor, her back flat against the wall, entirely comfortable and relaxed as she polished the blade of her sword with long, sensual strokes. She was still wearing her trademark, tightly cut crimson leathers, the color of freshly spilled blood, from her gleaming thigh boots to her tight high collar. Rose believed in being self-contained. She was exactly 7 feet tall, dark of hair and pale of face, lively muscled, full-breasted, and entirely terrifying. In the golden age of reason and civilized behavior, Rose Constantine was a psychopathic killer, a butcher of men and women and aliens, for whom slaughter was sex, and the killing stroke her orgasm.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting awkwardly on the other side of the cabin, and as far away from Rose as he could get, was that most notable thief, con man, and devout coward, Brett Random. Mousy-haired and blandly handsome, he was a likable enough rogue, but nothing and no one was safe when his restless hands were around. He had no scruples and fewer morals, and honesty was not in him. He'd never met a problem he couldn't best solve by running away from it. His friends were fond of saying that you always knew where you were with Brett. He'd always let you down. And yet, somehow, he'd found the strength of will, if not of character, to break from the arch-traitor Finn Durandal and join the side of the Angels. Certainly no one was more surprised than he. It might have had something to do with the fact that Brett claimed to be descended from two of the greatest heroes of the Old Rebellion, Jack Random and Ruby Journey. Though it should perhaps be pointed out that the only person who believed that was Brett Random. Brett was also a minor league Esper, as a result of having an extremely dangerous Esper drug force-fed him by the Durandal. He had once made brief but striking mental contact with Rose Constantine, and now they were linked on some level neither of them fully comprehended. Brett was almost entirely sure that it wasn't love, on the grounds that Rose scared the shit out of him. Brett and Rose slept in the only other cabin. Rose slept in the bed, and Brett slept on the floor, when he could sleep.
Oh, wow!
He was currently studying on a handheld view screen the contents of a data crystal he'd acquired from the cargo bay. That left just Saturday, the Reptiloid from the planet Shard. Lewis didn't have to turn his chair to look at the alien behind him. He could sense Saturday's lurking presence at the back of the cabin, like the loud ticking of an unexploded bomb. He had been given the name Saturday. The Reptiloid had had some trouble with the human concept of naming.
On Shard, we all know who we are.
He was 8 feet tall, his huge, massively muscled frame covered in dull bottle-green scales, and he had heavy back legs and a long, spiked tail. High up on his chest, he had two small gripping arms with very nasty claws, and the main features of his wide, wedge-shaped head were two deep-set eyes and a mouthful of more teeth than seemed possible. One look at him, and everyone else felt an immediate atavistic need to run for the trees. His people were new to the Empire. They delighted in the hunt, fought and killed each other for fun, or possibly art, and were currently fascinated by the human concept of war. Everyone else in the Empire was waiting for the other shoe to drop. On the whole, the Reptiloid was easy enough to get along with, but Lewis had decided that if Saturday asked one more time, "Are we there yet?" he was going to shoot the Reptiloid in the head. He didn't think anyone else would object. And if anyone did, he might well shoot them too. Two men, two women, and a Reptiloid pretty much filled the available bridge space. The two cabins were too claustrophobic and thin-walled to do anything other than sleep in, and the rest of the yacht was taken up with the oversized engine room and the packed cargo bay. So the outlaws stuck together on the bridge and tried not to get on each other's nerves, mostly by not speaking at all unless absolutely necessary. It always ended in arguments. It didn't help that they didn't really have anything in common, other than the fact of being outlaws, and that Finn Durandal wanted them dead. Of them all, Brett seemed happiest for the moment, because the data crystal he was studying so intently was just one of many filled with alien porn.
Nice.
In fact, the cargo bay was stuffed full of them. Redhead studied the contents list on the bridge computers, and then several of the crystals themselves, and had declared the alien porn to be of the highest quality, with quite superior production values. Everyone else was happy to take his word for it. Lewis scowled at the half-eaten protein cube and the empty cup before him. Jessamine had a point. This stuff might be nourishing, but it was no substitute for food. It didn't actually taste bad. The problem was both cube and water tasted of nothing at all, and as a result, mouth and tongue wanted absolutely nothing to do with them. Forcing the stuff down was a triumph of will over instinct. Unfortunately, the original captain of the Hereward had only recently landed on Logris and hadn't got around to replenishing his stores, which meant what supplies remained were very basic and severely limited in number. Even with the most efficient recycling and the most drastically reduced rations, Lewis and his companions were going to run out of food and water all too soon if they didn't find some planet where they could land safely. And there weren't many worlds left in the Empire where outlaws were welcome. Not in these civilized and law-abiding days.
I swear this stuff probably tastes better coming up than it does going down.
Jessamine stared disgustedly at the barely nibbled protein cube in her hand.
Lepers who eat their own extremities would turn up what was left of their noses at this. And the last time I smelled anything like this, it was floating in a bucket marked hospital medical waste.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Brett didn't look up from his display screen.
Why don't you have some nice distilled water to take your mind off it? That stuff's so pure it tastes of something you drank 3 weeks ago.
I know the provisions are vile, and I hate to think how many times it's already been recycled through someone else's system, but it's all there is. It'll do to keep us alive till we get where we're going. Try not to think about it.
I am a star! My palate has been trained and sensitized to experience only the very best of the culinary arts. I am a diva! I have whole armies of fans who would crawl naked across broken glass just to chill my wine for me. I am not accustomed to slumming it. God, I'd kill for a champagne mouthwash.
The control panels lit up happily.
Sorry again, one and all, but it seems the Ant's previous captain put all his money into upgrading his defenses and didn't have anything left over for luxuries like food transformation tech. On the bright side, we're faster than most star cruisers, and we've got sensors and stealth capabilities you wouldn't believe.
Lewis looked thoughtfully at the control panels.
Yes, I've been wondering about that. Perhaps you can explain why a simple pleasure yacht has an H-class star drive. They're usually reserved for military and peacekeeper ships.
Brett looked up from his view screen and smiled at Lewis.
Oh, I can answer that one. This ship is as fast as it is because it has to be. Smuggling alien porn is a death sentence on a whole lot of alien planets for all kinds of political and religious reasons. And the Imperial courts aren't too keen on it either. Because, well, mostly because they're a bunch of prudes. Same reason for the ship's force shields and heavy-duty security systems. This guy couldn't afford to get caught.
He's probably right, Sir Deathstalker.
Lewis just knew that the AI's relentlessly cheerful voice was going to start seriously grating on his nerves soon.
Choosing the Hereward to hijack could be seen as a classic case of good news, bad news. The good news is that at the speed we're traveling, the Empire is going to have a hard time finding anything that can catch up with us. The bad news is that if we run into anyone who knows what the Hereward usually traffics in, they'll probably try to blow us apart.
Perfect. Just bloody perfect. I'll bet Owen didn't have these problems when he was starting out.
You know, for a golden age, humanity has become really quite boring and inhibited in some areas. In Owen's day, you could get your hands on practically anything for a prize. In fact, go back a couple of centuries and I could have got you into some live shows where the action would have steamed up your eyeballs and made them clang together. Clean living and decency is vastly overrated, if you ask me.
Lewis tried to stop scowling. It was making his head ache.
Oz?
Yes, sir. Right here and ready to serve your every wish, Sir Deathstalker.
God, I hate a cheerful AI. It's like those recorded announcements you get at starports when they apologize for your ship running late and screwing up all your connections. You know they don't really mean it, the bastards. Every time I hear a computer getting cheerful, I just know bad news is coming.
Let me get this straight, Oz. You claim to be the same AI that served my ancestor, the Blessed Owen, 2 centuries ago during the Great Rebellion, yes?
Well, yes and no. I'm not entirely him. He was destroyed twice. First, by Owen and his companions when it was discovered that the original Ozymandias had been secretly programmed by the Empire to spy on them. The AIs have shown managed to preserve a few fragments of the original AI personality and built a new AI around it. Then, later, Owen and Hazel destroyed that ours after they found it was spying on them for Shub. Not a very lucky personality, when you get right down to it. I'd be worried if I was superstitious, which I'm programmed not to be. Anyway, the AIs of Shub built me around what fragments remained of the second ours. So, I'm not strictly speaking Ozymandias. I'm a copy of a copy. But I'm as close as you're going to get, so make the most of me, because I'm bloody good at what I do.
Hold everything. Are you saying you're a part of Shub? Just another of their voices like the robots I met? And why do I just know you're going to say yes and no?
I don't know. Maybe you're psychic. I am a sub-personality, a fairly separate sub-routine with a certain amount of autonomy. So I'm me, but I'm Shub as well, at a distance. I'm all yours, ready and eager to obey your every command. But Shub looks over my shoulder from time to time. And if you're confused, think how I feel. Shub has raised multitasking to an art form.
Great. We've stolen the only ship in the Empire whose AI suffers from multiple personality disorder.
Rose continued to polish her sword, not bothering to look up.
And I hate these clothes, too.
Jessamine did have a point there as well. She and Brett had both had to change their clothing, on the grounds that what they'd been wearing had become more than a little battered and bloodstained during their escape from Logris. Lewis had just scrubbed his armor clean, Rose had ignored the state of her leathers, and Saturday had licked the gore off his scales with a limber virtuosity that impressed and disturbed the others. The only spare clothes on board the Hereward came from the captain's closet. Fortunately, it held a fairly wide collection. Either the previous captain entertained a lot of friends, or he liked to play dress-up on long voyages. Jessamine was now wearing a series of overlapping silk creations in dazzling and fiercely clashing hues, all heavily perfumed. On first seeing herself in the mirror, Jessamine had angrily announced she looked like a Mistworld prostitute. Brett had asked her how she knew, and the conversation had deteriorated rapidly. Brett himself was now wearing a thermal suit with built-in chameleon tech, so that he could fade into any background. He was very pleased with it, on the grounds that it opened up whole new fields of avoiding trouble and not being found when there were dangerous things that needed doing. Brett firmly believed that fighting was something other people did, and feats of heroism and derring-do were for people who needed their heads tested. Being around Rose had done nothing to change his opinion. Lewis just knew this conversation wasn't going to go anywhere good, and was racking his brains for some way to derail its present course.
You know I want that.
Almost despite himself, Lewis leaned out of his chair to get a look at what Brett had on his view screen now. Lewis had checked out some of the earlier examples of alien porn, just out of curiosity, and had to say it did nothing much for him. Some of the human-alien interactions were interesting, but he found most of the alien-alien material, frankly, incomprehensible. On finding out what the Hereward's cargo was, his first reaction had been to declare it should all be seized and held as evidence.
Might I take a tick to remind you that you, sir, are no longer a paragon? Or have you forgotten already?
Oh, hell. Drop the lot into space. We can use the extra room.
Dump it? Are you crazy? Do you know how much we can sell this shit for on Mistworld? Look, if we're going to be rebels on the run, we're going to need working capital. Lots of it.
Lewis had finally agreed, in principle at least, but he still wasn't happy about it. He took a look at what was amusing Brett, and felt his scowl headache coming back again.
Brett? What is that? I mean, those two, whatever they are, aren't even touching each other. And even if they were, they don't appear to have anything that would make it worthwhile anyway.
Huh. Well, maybe it's a mood piece. You know, all in the way they're looking at each other.
They haven't got any eyes, either.
Maybe you had to be there. It just reminded me of a girl I knew once, that's all.
Don't go there, Lewis. Trust me on this.
Brett changed the scene on his screen.
What? Hello? Oh, I do not believe this.
I just tapped in a search on celebrities, and I appear to have found a rather sporty scenario featuring a certain celebrity not a million miles from where I'm sitting.
What?
Jessamine was quickly on her feet in a flurry of silks, and she stormed across the bridge to glare over Brett's shoulder. Louis quickly joined her, peering over Brett's other shoulder. The display screen showed what certainly seemed to be Jessamine Flowers and a half-alien woman getting very friendly with each other in a setting where clothing was clearly optional, if not downright discouraged. Louis could feel his face heating up.
That is not me. That is a lookalike, probably fresh out of the body shop. I did do a few artistic studies very early on in my career, but they were strictly solo poses for the serious collector and appreciator of the nude form. I never did anything like that, even when I was touring in rep. I do have my standards, darling. And I haven't been able to get my ankles that far behind my ears since I was 19. And who or what is that person she's doing that with?
That is Nikki 16, an old acquaintance of mine. She's half Najar, all woman, and one hell of a performer. You go, girl!
Wait a minute. I thought the Najar were those squishy little mushroom people.
That's the larval stage. The final adult form is largely insectile. Exactly what Nikki's human and Najar parents ever saw in each other has always been a mystery to me. Presumably love really is blind after all. She's called Nikki 16 because she's one of 16 broodmates. She's the black sheep of the family, if you can apply the term to someone with antennae, compound eyes and six breasts.
God, look at her flex, though. What a healthy, enthusiastic and limber soul she is.
Are you sure that's not you, Jessamine?
That's Miss Flowers to you, you degenerate. That is definitely not me, and I can prove it. I have a small purple birthmark on my person. It's always covered with makeup when the role calls for stage nudity. And besides, that doesn't even look like me, not really. My breasts aren't that big, the nose is all wrong. And I wouldn't do that if you paid me. Louis, Louis!
Sorry, I got distracted.
Go and sit down in your chair again, dear, and push your eyeballs back into their sockets. As for you, Random, I strongly suggest you find something else to look at before I take that data crystal out of the viewer and ram it so far up your left nostril it will shoot out of your right ear.
All right, I'm changing the scene. Cool, touchy. Some people have no sense of humor.
Jessamine gave Brett a long, thoughtful look.
Brett Random, you know, I'm sure I've seen you somewhere before.
Brett froze, his face automatically falling into innocent mode, while all his internal systems panicked. His well-honed sense of paranoia was never far from overdrive at the best of times. He smiled winningly at Jessamine while his mind worked frantically, trying to remember if he'd ever run a scam on her or any of her people. He was pretty sure he hadn't, but there was no denying he'd got around in his time. And given the sheer number of confidence tricks and stings he'd pulled down the years on any number of celebrities who had more ego than common sense and who thought their position made them invulnerable...
Oh, I'm sure I'd remember meeting such a great star as yourself, Miss Flowers. I just have that sort of face. You know, people always think they know me from somewhere.
Jessamine was unconvinced, but let it go rather than get sucked into yet another argument.
I do meet a lot of people. Or at least I did. I can't believe my whole life went down the toilet so quickly. And I certainly don't believe my fan base will accept any of the terrible things that bastard Finn has been saying about me on the news broadcasts. I mean, they're my fans. What's the point of having fans if they won't stick with you? Some did. You saw them, Louis, demonstrating against my imprisonment outside Traitor's Hall.
You said it yourself, Jess. The public can be very fickle. I couldn't believe they'd turn on me so easily either.
Louis tapped his fingertips together thoughtfully and frowned down at them.
You can bet Finn will have all his best propaganda people working day and night on discrediting both of us. They'll probe into our respective pasts and dig up every bit of dirt they can find.
There's dirt in your past, Sir Deathstalker? I'm shocked!
Shut up, Brett.
Shutting up right now, sir.
What they can't find, they'll probably make up. You can't be an honest paragon without making some enemies. People are only too willing to tell tales about you in the name of revenge. What about you, Jess? Is there much in your past they could find that they could use against you?
Well, rather a lot, actually. I've never pretended to be a saint, darling. And a certain amount of bad behaviour is expected of you when you're a star. It's affairs of the heart and sort of secret assignations that keep your face in the gossip shows. If no one's talking about you, how can you be a star? I admit it, I was a slut sometimes. It was good for business. And you have to throw the odd temper tantrum in public or no one will take you seriously. You have to give the media stories or they start making up their own.
I don't suppose there's any point in asking you, is there, Brett?
None at all. I'm a scoundrel and proud of it. The good Lord put me on Logris to shear a sheep, and I have been a busy, busy boy. Wherever rogues and villains gather, my name is on everyone's lips. I am a Random's bastard, and I glory in it.
Then what are you doing here with half the Empire after you?
Brett pouted sulkily.
One moment of conscience in an otherwise spotless life and my whole career is over. Oh, I could spit. I don't even want to think about what my old comrades will be saying when they discover I've hooked up with you.
I've done nothing I'm ashamed of.
Well, yes, but that covers a hell of a lot of ground. Some of the things you did for the Durandal.
Yes, by all means, let's talk about that. You've been only too willing to talk about yourself and your many triumphs during the past few days, but you've hardly said a word about your involvement with Finn-bloody Durandal.
Talk to us, Random. I want to know everything you know about that man. What he did and what he had you do. And all the things he planned to do. Help me to understand why one of my oldest and most trusted friends and colleagues has become the greatest villain of the Golden Age.
I suppose I should start with the Neumann riot outside Parliament. Up till then, it had all been just talk, making plans and gathering support and assistance. Finn was responsible for everything that happened in that riot. He planned it, orchestrated it from beginning to end. He planted agent provocateurs in the Neumann march and in the crowds to stir things up and push them out of control. One of them shot the Paragon Veronica May Savage on his orders and started the whole blood and slaughter that came after. It was all designed to intimidate Parliament and discredit the Paragons, and you were supposed to die too that day. I lured you away from the main action, just so that Rose could have a crack at you.
You shot me. I helped you, and you shot me.
It was orders. Finn's orders. You don't say no to Finn. Anyway, Saturday turned up and saved you.
Yes, I'm still rather annoyed about that.
Rose looked at Saturday and smiled. There was no humor in her dark rosebud mouth, only a promise of revenge, presently delayed. The huge reptiloid looked back at her interestedly, absently flexing the terrible claws on his hands.
You see, both Rose and I really had...
Brett hurriedly continued with his tale, describing how Finn had methodically set himself up as the mastermind behind a far-reaching scheme to bring down the whole Golden Age, by whatever means necessary. How he bribed and colluded and intimidated people on all sides of the law to build the secret army he needed, which was led by specialized criminals he recruited from the notorious Rookery. Brett tried to talk about his encounter with the awful uber-espers the Spider-Harps in their charnel house kingdom deep under the Parade of the Endless, but it still upset him too much.
Making deals with the Esper Liberation Force? He must be out of his mind.
Oh, I don't think so. No, I think he was always like this inside. He just never had a reason to let it out before.
But what does he want? What's this all for? Does he want to make himself king?
Perhaps. Or perhaps he just wants to burn it all down so he can dance in the ashes. The Durandal is an extraordinary man. He has a sense of purpose and destiny that is pure and uninhibited. A force of will entirely uncorrupted by mercy or compassion. I like that in a man.
If you're so hot for the little shit, sweetie, what are you doing here with us?
I came to be with Brett. Or perhaps I'm here because fighting for the Durandal would have been too easy. I do so love a challenge. There's no joy to be had in the slaughter of easy prey.
Oh, I do so agree. Just as I am here because siding with you offers me the best chance for killing and mass carnage.
I may puke.
Really. I'm not kidding.
Alberto Ward never had these problems. Let us all try to keep to the subject. You spent the most time with Finn Brett. He must have talked to you. How could he have gone so bad so quickly? He was the greatest living paragon, dammit. They'd almost run out of awards to give him for courage and heroism above and beyond the call of duty. He was admired and adored all across the Empire. And now he's a traitor and a murderer, betraying all his old friends? Just because I was made champion instead of him? It seems such a petty reason to fall so far so fast.
I think for him, it was a wake-up call. Because he never was a hero. Not really. He just played at being one, until something more interesting came along. Well, you worked beside him, Sir Deathstalker. Did you never notice some of his more extreme tendencies?
Lewis shifted uncomfortably in his chair.
I don't know. It worries me that perhaps I did, and turned a blind eye because he was so good at catching villains. But we spent time together off-duty, Finn and Douglas and me. We talked and drank together. Had good times. I trusted him to guard my back, and he never let me down. Till now.
I never trusted him. He was always too pretty, too perfect. When people like that break, they break all the way. At least Finn has the excuse of being crazy. Why did you go along with him, Brett, knowing what he was?
Hey, it wasn't like I had a choice in the matter. He said he'd kill me if I didn't go along, and I had every reason to believe him. Some of the things I heard him say. I'm no saint lady, Sir Deathstalker. I'm a career criminal and proud of it. But he's so far over the edge now he can't even see it from where he is. Like Rose said, there's nothing he won't do. No atrocity he'd flinch from to get what he wants. And much to my surprise, it turned out there's a line even I won't cross after all. After what I found in his secret files, I had to help you escape. And, well, I am a random after all. My ancestors and yours were friends, comrades. Perhaps we're meant to be together.
Oh, please, spare me. Lewis was a paragon and I was a star, but even we are not the stuff of legends. You are and never will be anything more than a common thief who got in over his head and panicked.
I was never a common thief. I was a top-rank thief. I could con you out of everything you owned, including the clothes you were wearing, and so skillfully, you wouldn't even notice until the wind changed direction.
We left the Durandal of our own free will. Brett for his reasons, and I, because Finn wasn't worthy of me. He had ambition, but no taste. For him, killing was just killing. I expect a much higher quality of murder with you, Sir Deathstalker. With you, I confidently expect death-defying schemes, overwhelming odds and suicide missions, and all the other things that make life worth living. The killing's always good around a Deathstalker. You draw it to you. It is your destiny. Just lead me to the slaughter and turn me loose upon your enemies. It is all I ask of you.
I want to go home. I want to go back to when my life made sense and I wasn't surrounded by crazy people. Thank you, Rose. Rest assured that if we ever come to the point where one of us has to make a last desperate stand so the others can escape, I promise I'll think of you first.
Rose considered him thoughtfully.
How is it, Sir Deathstalker, that a warrior of your renowned abilities never fought in the arena? I would have been delighted and honored to cross swords with you.
I kill for duty, when there's no other way to get the job done. Never for pleasure.
Ugh, how boring.
Rose looked away and seemed to lose all interest in Lewis. He didn't know whether to feel insulted or relieved.
Don't you dare turn your back on us like that. Since we're talking about your career on the Bloody Sands, perhaps you'd care to explain to us just how a complete bloody psychopath got into the arena in the first place. There are supposed to be a whole series of psychological tests that have to be passed by all would-be gladiators, expressly designed to keep out people like you. So how the hell did you get in?
Rose turned back to smile at Jessamine, with her humorless crimson mouth.
It was easy. The arena owners rig the tests. They always have. They realized a long time ago that people like me, the natural-born murderers, make the best fighters. The stars will give the crowds what they want and keep them coming back for more. Sane people don't last long on the bloody sands. They get careless or they burn out too quickly. Come on, what sensible, well-adjusted person would want to fight in the arena anyway, to face the threat of suffering and dismemberment and even death over and over again? The arena is where we go to sate our ancient appetite for blood. I've often thought they should test the crowds. But that would give the game away, wouldn't it?
The arena is a place to display valor and skill and fortitude. A testing ground to bring forth heroes.
Blood, Deathstalker. It's always been about blood. When your civilized men and women go to the arena, they go to see people like me, to glory in what we do. And afterwards, they dream about being me. Underneath all the culture and refinement of your precious golden age, all the old appetites are still there, repressed but not forgotten. Why do you think pure humanity and the church militant became so popular so quickly?
No, I don't believe that. I won't believe it. People are better than that. They proved it by overthrowing Lionstone and building the Golden Age. We have our dark side, our baser instincts, but it has always been the triumph of humanity that most of us rise above them.
Of course you believe that. You're a Deathstalker. You are the best of us. But you still need someone like me, just as the Blessed Owen needed his ruby journey.
Excuse me. Fascinating though this conversation undoubtedly is to those who care about this sort of thing, I have a question. How is it that you and I never fought in the arena, Rose Constantine?
Because we were stars, and the arena owners didn't want to risk either of us while they could still make money out of us. You wouldn't believe what they make off of merchandising alone. They would have given you to me eventually, when they'd made all they could off of you.
The pale tip of Rose's tongue moved briefly over her dark lips.
I was looking forward to it.
I'm sure it would have been quite delightful.
Brett looked disgustedly at Rose.
Hardly a word out of you for days, and now you can't stop talking. A whole new philosophical side to you, and all of it utterly depressing. Why can't you say something nice, just for once?
Sorry, I don't do nice.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. Such corruption and vileness going on right at the heart of Logris. It's like something out of Lionstone's time.
People want what they want.
Brett immersed himself in his private view screen again.
And as long as they do, other people will be right there, ready and willing to supply it to them. For a price.
God, you depress me. I used to bust scumbags like you. Psycho killers in the arena. Alien porn. Why do people want shit like that anyway?
Brett looked up from his screen.
Because, Sir Deathstalker, Sir Paragon, people always want what other people think they shouldn't want. Things they can't have because other people say they shouldn't be allowed. Maybe especially in the Golden Age. Being civilized is hard work. The higher we rise, the more fun there is to be had in allowing yourself to fall. Honor and virtue are all very well, but they don't satisfy like a good old roll in the mud. You and Miss Flowers should understand that. She was engaged to be married to your best friend. You were champion. She was going to be queen. But you both threw it all away to be together. So here you are, Sir Deathstalker, on the other side of the law with scumbags like me. Well, how does it feel? Had any good insights yet?
What we did for love.
Oh, love, yes. Well, then that makes everything all right, doesn't it?
Finn Durandal has to be fought. He has to be stopped. Nothing else matters. And if I have to work with poor materials like you, Brett, then that's what I'll do. I'll make a hero out of you, or kill you trying.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Brett turned ostentatiously back to his view screen. Lewis leaned back in his captain's chair and pretended to study the comm panels before him. For all his professed confidence, he felt lost, abandoned, and very alone. So much of what he'd believed in had turned out to be built on sand,
or blood.
The people he'd sworn to protect had disowned him and betrayed his faith in them by embracing madness and evil. He'd fought so hard to be perfect for them. Surely he had the right to expect as much from them. And now here he was, a reluctant rebel against the very authorities he had once proudly represented. Deep down, he had often wondered what it must have been like to be an outlaw like his blessed ancestor, the Owen, to fight alone and heroically against an evil empire. He'd had his quiet, secret fantasies of putting himself to the ultimate test, to be a real Deathstalker. Well, now he was living out his dreams, and they had turned out to be nightmares. He'd become the rebel hero at last, but he'd never dreamed he'd have to give up so much. His oath of fealty to king and empire, the honor of being a paragon and then imperial champion. He had finally discovered the great love of his life, but couldn't believe how much it had cost him. He had betrayed and lost his best, closest friend, King Douglas. Lewis looked over at Jessamine.
I've given up so much for you, my love. Don't ever let me regret it.
Ugh!
Jessamine threw what was left of her protein cube away.
That was disgusting! God knows how many times it's already been through recycling. I'd rather starve! There are convicted mass murderers on prison planets who eat better than this.
What's the matter, Diva? Not used to slumming it with the real people?
The food is disappointing. Where's the fun in food if it isn't kicking and squealing?
Everyone looked at him.
Can I just say, oh, puke? Also, yuck and ugh. Someone change the subject now.
And can we please not talk about prisons? This overcrowded tin can reminds me far too vividly of my one unfortunate stay in Durance Vile. It's making me distinctly twitchy.
We all know why you're twitchy. It's because you raided the medicine cabinet yesterday and took every pill and potion you could get your hands on. It's a wonder your brain cells haven't melted down and dribbled out your ears.
Given the quality and dosages of stuff I've tried in the past, my system hardly noticed it. Besides, I needed it. I get very nervous. Really, you have no idea. And don't bully me. I'm having a hard time. I may cry.
Leave the random alone. He may be small and useless, but he's mine.
Oh, God. It just gets worse and worse.
Jessamine spun around in her chair to glare at Lewis.
You heard that bloodthirsty cow, Lewis. She threatened me. Do something!
Lewis wondered wistfully whether the Hereward had a sleep gas option.
Everybody calm down right now. We still haven't decided where we're going yet. More and more it seems to me that we should put our search for Owen and Hazel on hold until we've dealt with all the loose ends we left behind on Logris.
Oh, there is no way I'm going back to Logris. Too many people want me dead there. Most definitely including Finn Durandal. Hell, he wants all of us dead. Preferably in slow, inventive, and very messy ways. Why the hell would we want to go back to Logris?
Some of us had friends we left behind. I'm worried about Emma Steele. She doesn't know about Finn, and she is perhaps the only true protector Logris has left.
You said yourself she's a first-class paragon.
Jessamine reached out to put a comforting hand on Lewis's arm.
She can look after herself, and she's got backup in Stuart Lennox, your official replacement from Viramond. You said he was a good sort.
I left him broken and bleeding on the starport landing pads. Another blood debt I owe Finn. Even if Stuart does make a full recovery, he's just starting out as a paragon. Too young, too trusting. I may have thrown him to the wolves.
They aren't who you're really worried about. You're worried about Douglas.
Yes, he is the king, and we left him alone and unprotected. Surrounded by political and religious fanatics just dying for a chance to bring him down. And he doesn't know about Finn either.
He has Anne. We've all been friends, but...
I don't trust her anymore.
Oh, Lewis. You can't worry about everyone, sweetie. It's an endearing trait, but an impractical one. Worry about us instead.
Oh, I do. Trust me, I do. What can we hope to achieve? A dishonored paragon, a disgraced diva, a homicidal maniac, an alien who likes eating, kicking, squealing things, and Brett.
Hey, wait a minute. I think I resent that. I have all kinds of useful talents. Not particularly nice ones, perhaps, but still.
Tell him about the data crystal you stole from Finn's secret files.
Brett tried to glare at her, but it came out more like a pout.
Thank you, Rose. I was saving that in case I needed something to barter with later on. Remind me to have a little talk with you about this marvellous new concept called forward planning. But since you raised the subject...
You're really not going to like this, Sir Deathstalker. But please don't blame the messenger for the message. I happened upon certain files in Finn's computer that he thought he'd hidden behind some really quite superior protection. The files contain some of his future plans, in some detail. I'll let you study the data crystal later. But the Durandal's most unpleasant scheme was his intention to have all the Paragons ambushed as they set out on a great quest to find Owen Deathstalker. Apparently, the idea is that they will be overwhelmed by superior forces while they're separated and far away from any hope of backup. Finn wants the Paragons taken out of the picture. Probably because he sees them as the only real threat left to his long-term ambitions. Or perhaps because he just always hated them for being what he only pretended to be.
That's it. No more arguments. I'm turning the ship around right now. We are going back to Logras. The Paragons have to be warned.
No!
Jessamine grabbed at Lewis's arm as he reached for the control panels.
Stop and think for a minute, Lewis, please. Even if we did go back, who'd listen to us? Who'd believe us? That's if they didn't just shoot us all on sight. You can bet good money that Finn has absolutely no intention of allowing any of us our day in court. We know too much about him. We can't put our heads back in the lion's mouth, Lewis. Our mission is more important. It has to come first.
Some mission.
Lewis's heart wasn't in it. He knew she was right.
Even supposing we can track down whatever survivors remain from the Age of Heroes, who's to say they'll be in any shape to help us after all this time?
They might hold the key to finding Owen, or maybe even the missing Hazel Dark. They have to help us. We need them now more than ever to stop the coming terror as well as Finn Bloody Durandal.
Lewis said nothing, remembering the dry gray words he'd heard on the dust plains of memory. Owen was dead. He died long ago, in a dirty back alley on Mistworld. Except, he had been seen alive in the future. Lewis still wasn't sure whether he believed that or not.
So, where are we going first? What planet do we choose as our destination? We're going to have to drop into hyper soon. The longer we stay in normal space, the better the odds are some pursuit ship will bump into us by accident.
There's not many places we can go in this depressingly honest empire.
There's always your homeworld, Viramond. I mean, surely they wouldn't believe the lies Finn's been spreading about you?
No, my family won't. But Viramond is a poor world, and poorly defended. Even if my clan could persuade the Planetary Council to harbor us, we couldn't hope to hold out against an Imperial punitive strike force. And you can bet there are elements there who would betray our presence to the Empire. For money, or patronage, or just because they believed it was the right thing to do.
He's right. There are scumbags everywhere these days.
Well, I say we go straight to Hayden, to the Madness Maze. You are a Deathstalker, Lewis. Your fate is inevitably linked to the maze. Even on Shard, we know the story of the Owen and his journey through the Madness Maze. How it made him so much more than human. If we were all to go through the maze, what mighty beings might we become? We could take on the whole empire and bring it to its knees in a sea of blood and awful.
I like him.
I wonder if I overlooked anything in the medicine cabinet.
Excuse me, hello, sanity calling. This is really not a good idea, people. There's a reason why it's called the Madness Maze, and an even better reason why no one's been allowed into it for so long. Do I really have to remind everyone here that the last 10,000 people to enter the maze lost their minds and their lives? Every single one of them died screaming! I wouldn't go into the maze if I was completely desperate. Hell, I am completely desperate, and I'm still not going anywhere near it. No, people! The maze is what we do when we've tried everything else, including prayer and closing our eyes and hoping it's all been a nasty dream. Next!
Can I put in a bid for Mistworld? Always a good bet when you're on a lam. Still fairly independent from the rest of the Empire and proud of it. A whole planet of rogues, individual thinkers, and complete headcases. Even Finn would think twice about trying to take Mistworld by force. And the stack of alien porn we're carrying will sell for major credits in Mistport. More than enough to buy us a proper ship with room to move around in and a decent weapons system. Probably with enough left over to hire a reasonably sized corps of mercenaries. Mistworld has the best connections in the Empire. Assuming Emma Steele didn't shut them all down before she left.
Not a bad plan and tempting. But I have played on Mistworld, and I'm here to tell you it is the arse end of the Empire. No civilized comforts, colder than a witch's tit, and more bounty hunters per square mile than any other planet in the Empire. You saw the broadcast. We're wanted, dead or alive, with a hell of a price on our heads. They'd be queuing up to take a crack at us on Mistworld.
Exactly. I'd rank it just ahead of Hayden, but only just.
Brett sulked. He'd already worked out a really clever plan for selling the alien porn in Mistport, and then disappearing with all the money the moment the others turned their backs. He had his own ideas about the future, and they very definitely didn't include being a hero, or Rose Constantine. A thought struck him. He might have been voted down, but he still had a secret ace up his sleeve. When Finn made Brett drink the Esper drug, he'd acquired rudimentary telepathy, and a limited but useful ability to compel other minds to do his will. He didn't use it much because it gave him killer headaches, but needs must when the devil vomits on your shoes. Very cautiously, he reached out to the minds around him, threading his compulsion delicately into their thoughts.
Mistworld.
Lewis frowned.
The place does have strong connections to Owen and Hazel.
Did anyone just hear something?
Saturday turned his great head and looked straight at Brett. The con man quickly shut down his probe and pulled his strongest mental shields into position. He supposed he shouldn't have been surprised Rose picked up something. Their minds had touched once. But Saturday? Did the Reptiloid have some kind of esp too? Brett shuddered internally, as if the bloody lizard wasn't dangerous enough already. Brett hunkered down behind his shields and put on his most innocent expression. Rose was looking at him thoughtfully. Brett could feel cold beads of sweat breaking out on his forehead.
No, forget Mistworld. Bad idea.
It seems obvious to me that we should go to Lacrimae Christi first. It's the one world where we can be sure of finding a living hero from the Great Rebellion. Tobias Moon is still there, even if no one has seen him in the flesh for ages. The last surviving Hayden Man. Oh, I've always wanted to meet a Hayden Man. They made such great villains in those old drama serials, fighting Julian Skye and all those other vid heroes. If anyone knows what happened to Owen and Hazel, it's got to be Tobias Moon.
Good try. But according to all the legends, even the Apocrypha, Moon was the only one of the great heroes who never went to face the Recreated. He wasn't there when Owen and Hazel disappeared. There's no doubt he knows many things now lost to history, things that might well prove useful to us. But like you said, no one set eyes on him in over a century. And the people on Lacrimae Christi are said to guard his privacy very jealously. We'd have a hard time getting to him. And no guarantee he'd be in any condition to give us helpful answers, even if we did. No. I think there's someone else who's even better qualified to tell us what we need to know.
God, you're long-winded sometimes. Just say where you think we ought to go next.
I don't care where we go. Just as long as I get to kill someone soon.
We go to Unseelie, because that's where we'll find the man called Carrion.
Everyone looked at him. Jessamy nodded slowly. Brett put up his hand, like a child in class.
Excuse me, do you think that perhaps you could let the rest of us in on this? Who the hell is Carrion? I have to say, the name alone doesn't exactly inspire confidence. And as for Unseelie, we are talking about the Asrai here, aren't we? The alien species noted for killing anyone who tries to land on their planet uninvited, and there are no invitations? The only alien species in the Empire to tell the Empire to go to hell and make it stick? That Unseelie? Am I the only sane person here?
Carrion was a friend of Captain John Silence. He was there with the Captain when the heroes faced the Recreated out on the Rim. He went through the Madness Maze with the Captain. He is the only great hero never to make it into the official legends. And it seems to me that someone like that might well know all kinds of things that also never made it into the official legends.
Carrion, Carrion. You know, I think I have heard that name before. Any apocrypha? No. It was from a really old data crystal some alien was trying to sell in a rookery. I never saw the contents myself, but Nicky did. Yes, Carrion. The human Asrai. The only man ever to fly with the Asrai. Hero, villain, monster. That Carrion?
Sounds about right.
The Asrai. Owen's dragons. I've always wanted to meet Owen's dragons. Oh, Lewis, darling, we have to go to Unseelie.
Give me one good reason why they'd listen to us when they blow up everyone else.
Because I'm a Deathstalker.
And so it was decided. Lewis couldn't help feeling that he ought to be taking charge more, like his ancestor Owen always had, but this didn't seem to be that sort of group. He had no real authority over any of them, and yet, still he felt responsible for the ragtag bunch of companions he'd somehow acquired, and his own motives for this quest were confused enough without getting into theirs. On the one hand, he wanted to find Owen so that his glorious ancestor could lead humanity against the Terror, but on the other hand, he desperately wanted to clear his name in Jessamine's. Lewis wanted his life back, the way it used to be. In the end, he had to do this thing, this impossible quest to find Owen Deathstalker, who might or might not be dead, because it was the right thing to do, because he had no choice, because he was a Deathstalker, and the Empire had to be saved, as much from itself as from the coming Terror. And yet, he wished he felt more like a leader, like a hero. He wished he was more certain over what to do for the best, instead of just stumbling from one crisis to another, with only the vaguest of intentions and plans. He wished above all that he was more like the blessed Owen, who had always known what to do, because he was a real hero. The Hereward dropped into hyperspace without being challenged by any other vessel, and headed for the Asrai world on Seelie. The trip took some time, even with an H-class star drive, and the stores of food and water depleted steadily, despite strict recycling and rationing. If they couldn't make up the difference on Unseelie, they'd be eating their shoes by the time they reached their next destination. Brett had already begun making quiet comments about Saturday, when the Reptiloid wasn't paying attention, mostly about the size of his drumsticks and how much luggage could be made out of the Reptiloid's hide. Lewis would have been concerned about the situation if he hadn't been more concerned about what they were going to find on Unseelie. Information about the Asrai world was very limited. No human or alien ship had been allowed to land on the planet in 200 years. There was no official quarantine, because none was needed. You entered Unseelie space entirely at your own risk, and if you got too close to the planet, the Asrai destroyed your ship. No one seemed too sure about how they did this, because no one ever came back to tell. Long-range scanners didn't operate in Unseelie space, and no one knew why. Most people had enough sense to leave the Asrai alone. Lewis had a good reason for going there, but no doubt others had thought the same, and it hadn't saved them. Lewis knew the stories of Owen Deathstalker and his dragons. He'd seen the big operatic production that Jessamine starred in. According to certain entirely unofficial legends, Owen had led an army of wise and powerful dragons against the Recreated. These huge and wonderful creatures had flown unprotected through the cold, inimical depths of space, tearing the Recreated apart with vicious fang and claw. They were magnificent, and they sang a song so beautiful it touched the soul of all who heard it. According to those legends, Owen lay sleeping in a great tomb, surrounded by his sleeping dragons, waiting to be called back in the hour of the Empire's greatest need. Could Owen be sleeping somewhere on Unseelie? Was that why the Asrai guarded it so jealously? Except, according to the dust planes of memory, it was Carrion and not Owen who'd flown with the dragons, who were really the Asrai. Lewis had to wonder what else the story might have got wrong, and whether his Deathstalker name really did have the currency with the Asrai that he hoped.